Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Reiki Touch by Lauren, and she could be reached at 954-464-0087. Our guest tonight is Greg Taylor, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, enjoying the weather here in New York today?
Oh, boy, I had enough. I really did. Another foot of snow today. It's like living in Alaska. You know, Alaska's probably less snow. It's crazy.
Well, the way Mother Nature's been telling us, you know, a thing or two.
I guess. I mean, I thought I read that the snow has hit 49 of the 50 states.
Including the southern states, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
It's cool.
You know, as you mentioned, our guest tonight is Greg Taylor, and one of the things that he does, and we'll hear more about it, is he maintains a website that has all sorts of information. And I pulled two stories off of the Daily Grail, which is the website that Greg runs, and one of them was pretty interesting. In Yorkshire, England, there was a doctor who every single week for 30 years would climb the steps of this clock tower, and it was his job to wind the clocks. Obviously, he was very connected, you know.
The doctor to wind the
clock. Yeah, well, that was his thing. You know, every week for 30 years. And unfortunately, the doctor, his name was John Farrer, passed away recently, and his physician, his own physician, of course, marks the time, you know, and it was 8:15. And then when the village looked up at the clock, what do you think?
It stopped at 8:15.
It stopped at exactly 8:15, which it wasn't, obviously, it wasn't supposed to. It wasn't anywhere near the end of the cycle. And, it, you know, that never happened
There's
before.
There's a song like that, you know.
It is?
About grandfather's clock was too tall for the shelf, so it stood 90 years on the floor. And then it's the whole song about, but it stopped at the time that grandfather died.
Yeah, and that's certainly not the first time we've heard this. We've heard this many, many, many times, sometimes from mediums, and sometimes I know the mediums say it, and it's hard to verify unless you're there.
Yeah.
But people do report, even without mediums, that they happen to look at, you know, dad's watch or grandfather's watch or spouse's, you know, watch, and it stopped at the moment that, you know, that they passed away.
Well, if you think that, if we're energy, right, and the watches are usually run by some sort of battery or energy, and if you make the assumption that maybe the battery had already previously died, it was running off the energy of the person.
Could be, or we have
to mark the time.
We have, you know, we say everything's connected. You know,
yeah.
We're connected even with things that we consider to be inanimate. You know, they're still energy devices. You know, so it really is an interesting phenomenon. There was another story that I found interesting is that some developers are coming out with this app called Shadow, and it's designed to help people record and interpret their dreams. Pretty interesting. What they do is, you have this app on your phone, and it turns it into, it's an alarm, but it's not an alarm in the sense that, you know, we have a regular alarm and it jolts you out of sleep. It's sort of designed to gently awaken you from that in between stage, you know, when you're dreaming. And as soon as you are awake, what you do is you can either speak into, you know, the device to, or the phone to, rec- record what the dream was when it's fresh, when you first wake up, and it'll transcribe it. And if you choose to do so, it will enter it into this database, you know, all the people that have this around the globe. And they look for patterns and consistencies. And
people who might be having the same dreams at the same time.
Or if a pattern, or a pattern develops that you could see among, you know, many, many people. And you don't have to use it for that, evidently. You could just use it for your own use. But it sorts all the data. So, for instance, if you had a dream that you were flying in a specific place, and then maybe you had another dream similar to that a couple of months later, and maybe there was something else that was happening. You know, if you took it, if you wrote it down on a notepad, it's hard to refer back and
it's find nearly impossible.
But this thing sorts the data, so that's a pretty interesting concept, don't you think?
Right, I'm glad it sorts it, because a lot of times you get some sort of a glimpse of a dream or an experience that you had a while ago, and you try and find it in your journal, and you're just like flipping through, you know, a vast amount of writing trying to find something, and rarely do you find what you're looking for.
Yeah, and I'm also very intrigued about the, you know, this concept of pooling, you know, the data, because we know that there have been many cultures in history that relied heavily on their dreams in a community. The community would get together daily, and they would all discuss their dreams, and then, you know, the elders or the shaman, you know, would base all their activities, you know, upon the information that they came up with in the dream. So that's pretty interesting as well. And when you talk about it in a global nature, we've discussed like the Global Consciousness Project, you know, with these random number generators all over the world.
Well, that's what I was thinking of. That's why I thought that, wow, if you can sort the data and come up with, let's say, 100,000 people who had the same or similar dreams on the same night, 24 hours before a particular event took place, wow, we have something better than a random number generator.
And also, it could be used as a planning tool. It could be used as a warning device. You know, I mean, if people have commonalities in their dreams, and then let's say it had some dire consequences, you know, whether natural disasters and so forth.
And that's it. I was reading recently about warning devices, and I know that some people have poo-pooed it, but the data that's been collected about animals that do anticipate things like tsunamis ahead of time or disasters, earthquakes ahead of time, and seek shelter because they're attuned to what's going on with Mother Nature. And I believe it was, if I remember right what I was reading, in China, they actually used this, they started studying it and used it as a warning signal, watching the animals and using that as a warning signal. And they have saved many lives by depending on the animal's instinct that we've sort of lost touch with.
Yeah, well, the future is going to incorporate many of these things, I suspect. All right, I'm anxious to get to our guests, so let's go to our break.
Okay, so when we come back, we'll hear more about the unseen world from our guest, Greg Taylor. So stay tuned.
Hello, my name is Lauren Halpern, and I'm a Reiki master. I enjoy bringing peace and inspiration to people. I conduct healing circles with inspiration, meditation, and Reiki at different community developments, religious institutions, and many other locations. People react so wonderfully to my events. For more information, please contact me, Reiki Touch by Lauren, at 954-464-0087. That's 954-464-0087, or email me at laurenhalpern@gmail.com. laurenhalpern@gmail.com.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed gems developed by the parents of a young man who passed away are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death, heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Our guest tonight is Greg Taylor. Our sponsor is Reiki Touch by Lauren, and she could be reached at 954-464-0087.
And Greg Taylor is the owner and editor of the popular online alternative news portal, The Daily Grail, which is dailygrail.com. He's also the editor of the Fortean anthology series, Dark Lore. He's widely read in topics that challenge the orthodox worldview, from alternative history to the mysteries of human consciousness. Greg has previously written books delving into the historical mysteries discussed in Dan Brown's novels, and he's just released his comprehensive overview of research into the question of whether consciousness survives death. The book is entitled Stop Worrying, There Probably Is an Afterlife. And Greg's joining us today from Brisbane, Australia, and where we normally say good evening to our guests, but I'm saying good morning to you and welcome, Greg.
Good evening, good morning to you, Bob and Fran. It's a real pleasure to be on your show.
Well, thank you. And I mentioned the Daily Grail, and we were talking a little bit at the top of the show. So before we get into the contents of your excellent book, tell our listeners a little bit about the Daily Grail, how you got into it, and what kind of content you have.
I started the Daily Grail back in 1998, 15 years ago now, or coming up to 16 soon. Basically, I've always been interested in different points of view. I don't like going swimming along with the mainstream current a lot of the time. So it was just a website that I started to try and track all of this news that wasn't really being covered in mainstream outlets. And that varies from new findings in archaeology and history right through to the latest science of quantum physics and the like, and, of course, all this afterlife research that we're all interested in.
Yeah. You know, I have to laugh sometimes because, I mean, you'll call it alternative science, and, you know, some people might call it fringe. And, I mean, do you hold out hope one day that we might be describing your site as dealing with mainstream science and maybe relegating some of the accepted mainstream theories as fringe?
Yeah, I hope so. And I think that's already happened in the history area. You know, we've been talking about for many years that maybe civilization started before around 3000 BC, which is when Orthodox historians and archaeologists had sort of been saying. And now in the last couple of years, all these older sites stretching right back to 10,000 BC and the like are starting to come out. So, you know, we certainly see movement in these areas that new findings do come along. And I think in afterlife studies, I think there's certainly a few areas there where something might happen, which we'll probably discuss later in the show. You know, there's quite a few scientific attempts to understand mediumship and also near-death experiences and recently deathbed visions as well. So I think there's definitely room for orthodox science to move on these topics. But as you well know, quite a few of them have almost religious connotations, not just on the spiritual side, but even in science. There's quite a few, you know, hard atheists that will don't want to move from their point of view too. So there's a bit of a battle there, but there's definitely room for movement, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there sure is a battle. And you know, if you ask the majority of the world's population, you know, do you believe in an afterlife? I think the majority of people, depending on what survey you read, will say yes. But do you think that what they're really saying is that they hope there's an afterlife instead of do they really believe in it? And then, you know, maybe based upon their faith and I mean, is there true? How do you get true belief, I guess, is the question. Do you get it by the evidence, or do you get it by reading, or do you get it from personal experience?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think I agree with you. I think most people, when they describe that they believe in an afterlife, I think that's a combination of just their upbringing, that a lot of people are brought up in religious traditions or just with the notion of heaven in quotation marks. And also a bit of hope involved there that, you know, I just hope I continue after death. When it comes to believing in it, that's one of the points of my book that I try to resist full-on belief, because I think once you start believing in something, you stop questioning it. And I think we should always question, you know, things based on evidence. But coming to that, those sorts of beliefs, or as I say, I think you've got to live with a worldview. So it's okay to come to a worldview as long as you question it. To get to that point, I think, as you said, I think it's a combination of reading. So, you know, my own book has come out of reading so much literature where it just comes to the point where I start saying something seems to be going on here. You know, it can't all be – everyone can't be making up these stories. And I think there's also, in terms of coming to that worldview, personal experiences. One of the things that's come out of my research is – how many people have these experiences? I unfortunately haven't had a direct experience, but I know you guys have. And when I spoke to my family, so many people in my family have had, you know, experience with deathbed visions or near-death experiences or mediumship. So I think a lot of people are coming to that, to this belief or worldview, a lot more based on direct experience. And that's part of the movement away from organized religion a little too, I think, is that people are realizing that they can have direct experience of many of these things rather than having to rely on a third party sort of intermediary between them and the spiritual side of life.
Yeah, and I do think, and you touch on this a bit in the book, but I think that a lot of people, you know, have this fear and this guilt, you know, because of their, you know, faith-based, you know, religion. There seems to be a feeling in most organized religions that, you know, that death and physical life are separated by this barrier, and that barrier should not be crossed. And if you attempt to do it, there's some sort of stigma about that. So, I mean, do you find that to be true?
I think so, and I think a lot of the you know, a lot of the religions are set up to stop people having these direct experiences or thinking that the barrier can be crossed, because they want to, you know, keep their hegemony over having their flock and not losing any of them. You know, many of the organized religions these days, to me, seem more like businesses. You know, they just need to keep their customer base and they need to keep them interested in what they're doing and not stray too far. I think when people actually get out there and start experiencing these things, I think that's why they start questioning their religion a lot more, because all of a sudden they realize that they can have direct experience rather than having to go through, like I said, this intermediary.
Yeah. So when I first saw the book, you know, and I looked at the title, you know, at first glance, I said, okay, let me see what he's driving at here. You know, stop worrying, there probably is an afterlife. And then I came to realize that you titled it because you were talking about people making an assessment of the evidence. I mean, you did a wonderful job in outlining some of the areas that you mentioned, you know, the deathbed visions and near-death experiences and mediumship and reincarnation and so forth. So are you encouraging people to make an assessment, to get well-versed in the literature, and then figure out what's the most likely explanation?
Yes, definitely. Like I said, you know, you have to live with a worldview, and so I encourage people to look at all this evidence that not many other people are putting out to them apart from, you know, shows like yours and hopefully this book that I've released. A lot of people, it's amazing when I come across people that they just have this really narrow understanding that has just been fed to them either by their religion or by orthodox science and the like. And so what my book is trying to do is just lay out all this evidence that's been collected from, you know, ancient times right through to just in the last year or two. There's still good research going on. Have a look at all this. It is a very quick primer. It's 300 odd pages, and trying to fit all of the material in there was a real challenge. I did a lot of editing to try and fit it into a readable book size. And then once they've got that grounding, then to move on and look at more of the deeper literature, the papers I mentioned, the scientific papers, some of the old Society for Psychical Research, you know, their books, things like that, and just come to their own conclusion. That's the main thing. Do the best you can, be honest with yourself, and come to the best conclusion you can.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you know, being an open-minded skeptic is not a bad thing.
No, definitely.
Yeah. So I was very happy to read the chapters in your book that deal with deathbed visions. Fran and I have had, you know, as you have, I've had personal experiences with relatives. We've witnessed it firsthand. When you first started reviewing the evidence of deathbed visions, and as you pointed out, it's by no means a recent phenomenon. It's been reported for centuries. So when you examined all the evidence and you talked to the palliative care professionals, were you personally surprised that this phenomena remains relatively unknown among the general public?
Exactly. Deathbed visions were like a revelation to me. I had barely heard of them myself, even though I was really well-read in mediumship and near-death experience literature. I came to the deathbed visions area and thought, this looks interesting for my book. I'll start researching this. And it almost felt like it took over the book. There was this whole area that so many people have been ignoring or haven't known about, you know, not deliberately ignoring, but they haven't known about it. It just hasn't been up there with near-death experiences, I think, since 1975, since Raymond Moody's book, have really dominated the public discourse on the possibility of an afterlife. And there's this whole related area of deathbed visions, that have just as much amazing literature. And as I quote, there's recent research that shows palliative carers, I think, you know, they report 60 to 70% of them report having heard of all these deathbed vision accounts. So it is an amazing area that deserves a lot more attention. And hopefully through my book, at least, and the work of guys like Peter Fenwick, you know, that will come more to the public's attention over the next few years.
Yeah, and I think you hit upon an important area, is that it's so prevalent among the healthcare professionals, but they don't necessarily talk about it openly, you know, outside of their environment. And frankly, a lot of the loved ones witness these conversations that their loved ones are having, you know, upon just, you know, before their death, the loved ones don't talk about it with their friends for fear of being labeled. So, I mean, you mentioned so many people know about NDEs. It's sort of like, you know, popular to talk and discuss it, but I just can't wrap my head around the fact that why people are so reluctant to have these, you know, to discuss these amazing experiences. And the implications are really significant too, because if everybody, it's possible that everybody has a deathbed vision. Do you think that's a realistic statement? I mean, some people may.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I spoke to an Australian palliative care physician, Dr. Michael Barbato, and he sort of said, you know, you have this huge percentage that are reported, but he thinks they're probably more prevalent the closer you are to death. But the closer you are to death, then your ability to report back on it obviously diminishes. So he sort of is of the feeling that the percentage of people that have it is either really high or perhaps we all have these things. As for addressing, you know, people not reporting these, I think there's two issues at hand. One is that near-death experiences are a great story for people who are alive to hear, because it's someone who went to death and then came back and they're still living. They have this amazing experience, but they're still with us. Whereas deathbed visions, there's still that fear factor that, well, they died at the end of it. Even though it's got a great story, there's not that hero status of coming back and returning.
Good
the
point.
The second thing I think that really drives, you know, people not reporting these sorts of things is just the shame or ridicule that's become attached with it for whatever reason. Well, one of the main reasons I feel is the way that fundamentalist skeptics in the modern age have made this sort of thing woo, as they say. You know, these days, if you report anything like these, you're supposedly a bit crazy or a bit off balanced. And yet, as we've seen, a huge percentage of people have them. You're not off balanced if you have them or if you witness them. More people should be reporting them. And I think fundamentalist skeptics have a lot to argue, a lot to answer for when it comes to scaring people into reporting what is one of the most profound human experiences, the end of a life when amazing things happen and people are scared to mention it. You know, I spoke to a few people who didn't report back near-death experiences or deathbed visions for a year or two, not even to their, you know, to their wives or husbands, for a fear that they might be ridiculed or thought to be crazy. And the same with palliative carers. They don't report them because they're worried about losing their job, because they're going to be thought to be a bit crazy or a bit off balance. And I think it's something we really need to turn around. And again, hopefully that was one of the goals of the book, is to normalize it a little bit. Hopefully in my book, it brings it out that lots of people have these experiences and we should start embracing them as profound human experiences instead of ridiculing them.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the key. I mean, I certainly applaud you with your motivation in writing the book. When we get the population to discuss these things freely, that's when we'll start to change worldview, you know, and probably enhance the quality of life. There's another thing that's just as fascinating that you talk about, and I wasn't familiar with some of the terms for it, although I've witnessed it myself. Where you have this period of time just before somebody is dying, or in the week or two before, where they have this period of lucidity. So I know some of the terms you mentioned in the book, a terminal lucidity or lightning, which I hadn't heard before. I mean, I always refer to it as rebound, but you know, there's no medical explanation for it. And this is also ignored. Is it because we haven't documented these cases scientifically that people just discount them?
Yeah, I think there's a few reasons there. It was documented quite well in the 19th century, but then we've had quite a few changes. One, we've had that move to a materialist state of mind, where a lot of these things won't be reported in the medical literature, because basically the higher up is in science and medicine don't want to see that in a peer-reviewed journal. The other thing is we've started moving to dying in hospitals. So it's probably underreported there, where people are dying. Maybe they're having this terminal lucidity, this lightning, but nobody's there to see it, or it's only a nurse who doesn't recognize that, you know, in the terminal lucidity of the 19th century, what was happening was people would come back and then they could suddenly name people and talk about their memories, and people recognized that they had come back from this coma-like state, or this, you know, they weren't in a position to remember these things, and all of a sudden they were able to talk lucidly about their past and who was in the room. Whereas in the modern day, in a hospital setting with maybe just a nurse there, someone who comes to and has this lucidity, you're not going to recognize it if the person at the bedside doesn't understand what that person is talking about.
The another form of evidence that you discuss in the book, and it's a term that a lot of people may not be familiar with, is this Peak and Darien experiences. tell our listeners a little bit about that.
So the Picandarian, it gets applied to both near-death experiences and deathbed visions. It's one area of evidence that does suggest something might be happening with these things that is not explainable by modern science. The Picandarian is basically when someone has a deathbed vision or a near-death experience and comes back, or in the case of deathbed vision, just talks about it before passing, and they say that they saw someone who they thought was alive at the time, but who had actually passed. And at times it's because it was kept from them by the people at the bedside because they didn't want to upset them as they were approaching death. Sometimes, especially in the 19th century, it was a case of the person lived far away and word hadn't got there by letter yet. This was a time when you couldn't phone up or get on the internet. So that there are cases where they report, quite often they'll sit there and they'll say, oh, there's my dead sister and there's my dead father. And hold on a second, why is my other sister here? She's supposed to be alive, but she seems to be with them. And it turns out that even though they thought they were alive, this person had passed just recently, just in the days or weeks previous. And so the Picandarian is this evidence that shows that people who have deathbed visions and near-death experiences sometimes see people that were thought to be alive but had actually passed.
So, I mean, and you put that high on your list of evidence suggesting an afterlife, and I see why. I mean, what could be more evidential? You can't argue that, as you mentioned, that the person had any knowledge by any normal means. It's hard to come up with an alternative explanation, isn't it?
Well, skeptics will certainly say either in a population of 8 billion people on planet Earth, sometimes people are going to make mistakes like that, or maybe they picked up on the emotions of people around and somehow inferred that that person had died. But that's one of the points of my book. All of these areas of evidence, you could maybe come up with a skeptical view and say, this is how you explain it. But then if you have that, and then you add the veridical OBEs had during near-death experiences and the terminal lucidity, and just one after another, mediumship, you just keep going through all these areas of evidence, you get to a stage where you start saying, I seem to be explaining away a whole lot of things which would be better explained if I just stopped and said, maybe there is an afterlife.
Yeah, and then I think you nailed that on the head. It's a kind of a situation where it's easy to explain away one of these disciplines of study, but when you take the whole body of evidence, it's hard to make a different assessment, and that's what you're doing in the book. We're talking with Greg Taylor. The book is called Stop Worrying, There Probably Is an Afterlife. The website is dailygrail.com. There is a link to Greg's book on our website. I would highly recommend you pick up a copy. So we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we will be discussing much more with Greg Taylor, so stay with us.
Hello, my name is Lauren Halpern, and I'm a Reiki master. I enjoy bringing peace and inspiration to people. I conduct healing circles with inspiration, meditation, and Reiki at different community developments, religious institutions, and many other locations. People react so wonderfully to my events. For more information, please contact me, Reiki Touch by Lauren at 954-464-0087. That's 954-464-0087, or email me at laurenhalpern@gmail.com. laurenhalpern@gmail.com.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death, heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, The Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Greg Taylor. Our sponsor is Reiki Touch by Lauren, and she could be reached at 954-464-0087. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Did you know that you can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% not-for-profit organization, without sending us a single pretty penny? When shopping on the Internet, think of us before you go to Amazon.com, and instead go to foreverfamily.org and use the Amazon link to get to Amazon. Don't worry, there's a link on every page of our new website. If you add that one simple step to your shopping, a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart will generate a donation from Amazon to us. And what if you don't shop on Amazon? Not a problem. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation without you having to send us anything. Visit iGive.com. Do it now. Sign up with iGive. It's free. Name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice, and just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the Internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,400 online stores that you're already shopping in, like Adobe, Expedia, J.Crew, Vera Bradley. And one last thing, you'll need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or you need another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holiday of the Earth raffle is up and ready for future winners to get those tickets. The link is available on our brand new website, and please be generous as these two raffles each year help us fund our very basic of programs, including this new website. In this raffle, you can win one or more one-hour phone readings with one of our certified mediums, Neil Zapowski, Renee Buck, Renata Santarelli, Lee Ashley, and Bobby Allison. It's only $5 a chance. and two of our annual December Holidays Past events had to be rescheduled. Holidays Past in Pompton Lakes is set for March 22nd, and the Oceanside Holidays Past is rescheduled for February 28th. There are still a few seats left at each of these events. Our annual grief retreat is set for the weekend of July 25th to 27th, back at the wonderful guest house in Chester, Connecticut. We have also added on a day just for parents who have lost children. Details continue to develop, but the event is up and running for those who do not want to miss out on this meaningful experience. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Greg Taylor. The book is called Stop Worrying, There Probably Is an Afterlife, and the website is dailygrail.com. Greg, we were discussing before the break some of the most evidential types of study that show or strongly suggest an afterlife. And one of them that you list is veridical NDEs. And I'm sure most of our listeners are familiar with near-death experiences, but maybe not the term veridical. So can you get into that a little bit about what a veridical NDE is?
Yeah, okay. A veridical NDE is basically when the person is, their heart has stopped or the like, or sometimes in an operating theater, their ears are blocked and their eyes have taped shut and the like, and they come back from their experience and describe that they saw something happening either in the operating room or outside the room they are in, or even at a distance, at a fair distance away, things that were happening, and they accurately describe them. There's a number of cases documented. Bruce Grayson talks about the case of Al Sullivan, who was in the operating theater, and when he came back, asked why the doctor who was working on him was flapping like a bird. And apparently this doctor, once he had scrubbed in to maintain sterile environment, what he would do was he would point at everything he wanted with his elbows, which made him look like he was a chicken trying to take off, basically.
Right.
And so that's like a classic veridical NDE. They come back, they describe things they shouldn't have seen because at that time he was out and his eyes were taped shut. And quite often it's something like that where the person, it's not something that the person you would think would imagine happening. It's not something they'd go, well, the doctor had his mask on his face. Every doctor has their mask on their face. They see things that seem a little bit odd but turn out to be true. So there's a number of these. There's the Pam Reynolds case, which a lot of people have heard about. Al Sullivan, I think I list about six or seven cases in the book in detail. And then I mentioned that Janice Minor Holden, a near-death experience researcher, actually has written a paper on this. And she collected, I think, over 100 cases in the literature and came to the conclusion that the cumulative weight of these narratives, just all of them added up together, should have some impression on people that something seems to be going on. People seem to be able to sense things outside of themselves while they're in this unconscious state. So that's what a veridical NDE is in the literature as anecdotes. And then that's something that is now being tested by Sam Parnia and his group in the AWARE study, where they're actually putting targets in hospital rooms out of sight and hoping that when people have an out-of-body experience, they might float up to the ceiling. They might be able to see these targets that can't be seen from the floor and report back. And if they can do that, that will definitely be a real hit for anybody thinking that it's impossible to see outside your body. Because if they come back and report these targets, it's going to be really hard for skeptics to deny that something's happening then.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wonder how successful the AWARE study will be. I keep thinking if I was on a table and passed away and then was up on the ceiling, you know, and looking down on my body, I'd probably say, like, holy crap, I'm still alive, you know, but I'm above my body. So I don't know necessarily that I'd be looking for targets. I'd probably be staring at my body trying to figure out what's going on. But on the
I spoke to Bruce Grayson about that, and Bruce himself, even though he's taking part in these studies with the AWARE study, he's a little bit skeptical for that similar reason. He makes the analogy that you're going through an airport and you're going through the screening process before you're hopping on the plane, and then you hop on the plane and someone says, what was the number of the TSA agent that you went past? You know, it's so many other things are happening, so many amazing things that people probably aren't going to pay attention to a little number tucked away in the room somewhere. So, yeah, there's definitely difficulties involved in the AWARE study, but at least people are trying to find an answer there.
Yeah, and there's other similarities. I think you mentioned in the book also, I mean, the Charlie Tartt's case, you know, where he was doing the dream studies, and one of his subjects was able to observe a five-digit number that he had stored on a shelf 6 feet above, you know, the subject. So how do you explain that? You know?
Yeah, I wasn't present there, so I can't give you a full skeptical explanation. Maybe that she stood up, or she had some sort of long extendable mirror. Again, these are skeptical explanations that they might come up with. They're not my explanation.
Yeah,
I'm sure skeptics would come up with something saying
you can rule out fraud. You know, then it becomes extraordinary. You know, I mean, so the skeptics will say that the controls weren't in place, but
exactly. There seems to be a lot of people in the world hoaxing or doing frauds.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you know, one thing I was somewhat amused, not because of what happened to you, but just because of your reaction. You mentioned, you know, in the end of your book that you had your own rather serious brush with death. And were you, after that happened, were you disappointed that you didn't experience all these things that you know and read so much about?
I was a bit. I've been researching and writing for over a decade on these topics, and then to have my own brush with death, and I had absolutely nothing. So I was happy to be alive, definitely.
Yeah. But
I was quite disappointed that something didn't happen, just even a little out of body experience or something. No, but my whole life, I think, has been like that. Even though I write about these topics, I'm one of the least paranormally inclined people you'll ever come across. But as I say in the book, when I talk to my family, a lot of my family have had these same experiences, and they're people I trust. They're not fraudsters, they're not hoaxers, and yet they've had these experiences. So, and I think we're all like that. If we talk to people close to us who we trust, they've all had these experiences.
Right. You know, going back to some of the most evidential types of evidence, you mentioned crossovers between mediumship and near-death experiences, and I really hadn't thought about that much. So, What do you mean by a crossover?
Yeah, this is, like deathbed visions, this is a really neglected area. Back in the 1960s, Dr. Robert Crookall, who actually, before Raymond Moody, was writing about near-death experiences, he wrote them under, I think he called them pseudo-death experiences or something like that in the 1960s. He was writing about them. And then in one of his areas of research, what he decided to do was he went back and looked at all these old mediumistic readings from the 1910s, 1920s, and found elements there that agreed with these pseudo-death experiences that he was investigating. At the time, you know, he didn't realize how big this would become as near-death experiences once Raymond Moody's book came out. But he found these similar elements. There's mediumistic readings where they hover above their body, like, basically, the person who has died and is talking through the medium says that after they died, they hovered above their body looking down on it. And then they saw a tunnel and they started going through a tunnel. And then they had a panoramic life review where they see all their elements of their life unfolding in front of them. There's all these similar elements, tunnel, the light, the panoramic life review, the out-of-body experience, reported by these people in the 1910s and 1920s, remember, before near-death experiences were in the public's consciousness. They reported these back, 100 years ago, and yet they seem to say that after they died, they had what is basically a near-death experience, except they didn't come back. They really did die and then spoke through a medium about it afterwards.
Mm. Yeah, it really is. So now you have two evidence coming from two different disciplines. So it's, again, we talk about taking everything collectively, and there's another example. What do you think about when you read about mediumship back in the Victorian age? Were you surprised?
Yeah, that's been a real research topic that's interested me for a long time, especially Leonora Piper.
Yeah.
I've written a fair bit about her. It makes me wish that we had more trance mediums these days so that we could test them. It seems to be something that has sort of phased out. There's not so many trance mediums these days, but they really did seem to produce some stunning results back then. And, you know, like in the case of Leonora Piper, there's 20 years of research by skeptical researchers and comprehensive, not just once a year, just all throughout the year, where they just keep finding these results over and over again with her. The problem with that now is you can cite it as much as you like, but it's separated from us in time. So it's, no matter how amazing it is, it's never going to count as evidence in the modern day. So that's why I think the work of Julie Beischel and Emily Kelly and those who are doing research with mediums in the modern day is really important.
Yeah, and then one of the problems, and I think you're very much aware of it too, is that, you know, there's a proliferation of these shows in the media, and it's like a cottage industry. You know, I mean, I call it a medium epidemic. You know, the mediums are, so-called mediums are popping up in virtually every street corner of every city, you know, the fact is that a lot of us are intuitive, you know, and just because you have an intuitive experience doesn't mean that you were meant to be a medium. So, that has nothing to do with the mediumship that you were talking about of Leonora Piper and others, you know.
Yeah.
So it certainly is something people can learn a lot when they read some of the cases, and you talk about some of that in your book. Unfortunately, I think we're out of time. We have been talking with Greg Taylor. The book is wonderful. It's called Stop Worrying. There Probably Is an Afterlife, and it's a pretty comprehensive review of the best evidence and much more. So the website is dailygrail.com. Take a peek. There's blogs. There's a news feed that comes in every day with all sorts of stories, and I've learned to use that as a resource now to get some material, so I appreciate that. Greg, thanks so much for being with us, and hope you come back and join us again.
Oh, thank you, Bob and Fran. It's been a real pleasure being on, and I hope to chat again soon.
Thanks. Thanks, Greg. Take care.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of the recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Trueb, Scott, Magnus, Gina DiDonato, Rita Dwyer, Tracy Lee Nash, Philip McPhee, Joel Orman, Jean Lash, Francis Mastracco, Tim Donahue, Barbara Russell, Vicki Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Barron, Eileen Lafada, Rita Springer, David Haith, Barbara Petillo, Leanne Ashley, David Mello, Phyllis Alexander, Betty Alexander, Ann Hutchinson, John Cahali, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel S., Jeanette Davies, Andy O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Marianne Pierzka, Flora Prisco, Stanley Mullen, Julie B., and Glenna Irwin. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
your loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.